Before I forget, Good News Club workers, you do not have a meeting tonight. Noel will send an email out with some instructions for Wednesday. So if you would keep tabs on your email so that you're up to date, that would be great. Luke chapter 22. We're going to be looking at a lot of different references tonight as we prepare for the Lord's table. So be prepared to turn quickly if you would. Luke chapter 22, and we will end up in verse 20 here in just a moment. What half of the Bible is Luke in? If you were to divide the Bible in the halves, what half of the Bible is Luke in? New Testament, right? So you have the New Testament and you've got the Old Testament. What do we mean by testament? You've got a New Testament, you've got an Old Testament. What exactly do we mean by testament? Well, if you were to look that word up, the word testament is used throughout the New Testament. It's used interchangeably with the concept of a covenant. So the New Testament would be the New Covenant section of the Bible. And the Old Testament would be the Old Covenant section of the Bible. And we look here in Luke chapter 22, and Jesus references this New Testament or this New Covenant. Look, if you would, this is at the Last Supper. Jesus has distributed the elements. He's talking about the bread. He's talking about the fruit of the cup here. And in verse 20, this is what he says of the fruit of the cup. Likewise, also the cup after supper, saying, "This cup is the New Testament in my blood, which is shed for you." So here at the Last Supper, Jesus is instituting or ratifying this new covenant. But to fully understand the new covenant, it's good to take a look back at some of the other covenants that God had made with Israel in the past. If you were to look back in the Old Testament, you would see several covenants, clear covenants that you can't miss. The first one was the covenant that God made with Abraham. Genesis chapter 12, Genesis chapter 15, I believe Genesis chapter 17 as well. And in this covenant, he promised to make Abraham a great nation, and that all the nations of the earth would be blessed from him, and that his nation would continue forever. There was another covenant that God made. It was called the Palestinian covenant. It is where he promised the descendants of Abraham that they would have the land of Israel as an eternal possession. Now, we see that there are times that they were kicked off and brought back and kicked off and brought back. Well, they're back now, and I kind of believe that they're going to be there until the end at this point. I could be wrong about that. But in the end, they will be in that land forever. There's another covenant that God made with Israel. It was the Mosaic covenant. There, as Israel came out of Egypt at Mount Sinai, God gave them the law. And we'll look at this covenant a little more in a moment. But he gave them the law, and it was a covenant that had responsibilities for Israel as well. Then God also made another covenant. He made this one with David. We call it the Davidic covenant. And he promised David, he said, "I will not allow your throne to perish. Your throne will be a forever throne," meaning there will be a forever person sitting upon that throne. So if you have two covenants that are referred to here in our division of the Bible, a new covenant and an old covenant, which covenant is being discussed when you talk about the Old Covenant or the Old Testament? Which one is being discussed? Would it be the Abrahamic covenant? Would it be the Palestinian covenant? Would it be the Mosaic covenant? Or would it be the Davidic covenant? Oh, I forgot to mention, there was another covenant that God promised but didn't actually institute in the Old Testament. He promised this new covenant that it would come. So which of those covenants would it be? Well, if you look at the book of Hebrews, Hebrews tells us that one of these covenants is temporary and that it ended, but that the rest of the covenants were permanent. They were final. They cannot be changed. They were eternal. Well, if you turn to Jeremiah chapter 31, if you would turn there with me, we find the covenant that God is talking about, or we find the covenant that is talked about with this old covenant, or this Old Testament. Jeremiah chapter 31. This is God's promise of the new covenant. This is what Jesus is talking about when he says, "This is the blood of my covenant," or my testament. This is what Jesus is referring back to. Let's read Jeremiah 31 And we're going to start in verse 31 and see if you can figure out which covenant it is that passes off the scene and that is no longer in effect. "Behold, the days are come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they break, although I was a husband unto them, saith the Lord." Which covenant is being talked about here? It's the Mosaic covenant, isn't it? Israel was unable to keep this covenant. And God says there is a covenant that is coming that will be different from the one that I made with Israel, with the whole nation of Israel, the one that they were unable to keep. Clearly, the one that God made with Moses and Israel at the giving of the law is the one that's in view here. Now, that covenant was the only one that could be done away with. And we'll see why it was the only one that could be done away with or replaced by looking at the nature of these covenants. Now, a lot of you are familiar with this, so we're going to go through this very quickly. But if you look at covenants, you need to know the nature of the covenants. Know the types of covenants that there are. So when you're looking at a covenant that God made with someone, you look to see what type it is. Some of the covenants were one-way covenants. Covenants that God made by Himself with someone else that He says, "I will do this." There is nothing that you have to do in order to experience the benefits of this covenant or the long-term benefits of this covenant. The Abrahamic covenant is one of those. The Davidic covenant is one of those. The Palestinian covenant is one of those. God said, "I will." It's not based upon you. Another type of covenant would be a mutual covenant. It's a two-way street. Both sides have obligations. And in the case of the Mosaic covenant, God said, "I will do this, I will do this, I will do this, if you do this, if you do this, if you do this." So it's mutual and it is conditional. If you look at those covenants and you think about that, you can see the nature of them. The Abrahamic covenant, God just told Abraham, "I'm going to do this." The Davidic covenant, He came to David and He says, "David, I'm going to do this." He came to Israel with the Palestinian covenant. He says, "I'm going to do this." Now, there will be times judgment will become, you will be taken from the land, but in the end, you will be back on the land because of my loving kindness and because of my promise to you. It will not be ultimately dependent upon you. But this Mosaic covenant was different. Obligations were put on both sides. Did God keep His part of the covenant? Absolutely. Did Israel keep their part of the covenant? No. If you get to Jeremiah 31, God says they actually break the covenant, or they broke the covenant. They were unable to keep that law. They kept trying to do it. Now, that covenant made provision for Israel's sin, but that covenant never fully dealt with Israel's sin when they broke the covenant. It temporarily covered it over, if you will. So God makes another new covenant with them that was coming along, and it would deal with Israel's sin once for all. Look, if you will, back in Jeremiah 31, and this is what God says. He says, "You broke the covenant. I'm going to make a new covenant with you. It's going to be different from the other one." And in verse 33, this is what He says, "But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith the Lord, I will put my law in their inward parts. I will write it in their hearts, and will be their God, and they shall be my people. And they shall teach no more every man his neighbor, and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord. For they shall all know me, from the least of them unto the greatest of them, saith the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and will remember their sin no more." So God made these promises of this new covenant, and it would not be dependent upon them. It was something that He would do. So know the type of covenant. The new covenant is an unconditional covenant. It is one that is unilateral on the part of God. He made it with Israel. The second thing you need to do is you need to observe the seal of the covenant. This is very helpful when you look at this. The main covenants that God gave Israel were sealed with the blood of sacrifices. All right, remember the Abrahamic covenant? He made the promise to Abraham in Genesis 12. Well, Abraham eventually did not stagger. He had faith that God was going to answer. But there were some times where I think he waffled a little bit. So God came to Abraham in Genesis 15 and he says, I'm going to show you, we're going to do a formal ceremony for this covenant so that you know I'm serious about it. In the ancient times, they would seal a lot of their covenants with blood. So God had Abraham sacrifice an animal, kill an animal, split the animal in half, and put one on this side and one on this side. And typically, in those ancient covenants, both parties would walk through the two sacrifices so that, or through the blood, so that they could show that they were serious about it. If you think back to Genesis 15, who ended up walking through the two animals? Did Abraham walk through the two animals? No, God put him in almost a trance-like state to where he could understand what was going on, but Abraham did not go through it. There was a lamp that represented God and a flame that represented God. That is what went through. And it was God saying, this is up to me. I'm doing this, and Abraham, I am sealing it with blood. Now you get to the Davidic covenant and the Palestinian covenants, which are unconditional covenants. You don't really see a blood aspect there. I believe that's because they flow from the Abrahamic covenant. Everything that God promised Abraham, you see enlarged and expanded in the Davidic covenant and the Palestinian covenant. The Mosaic covenant had a blood aspect. Here Israel is. They come to the bottom of the mount. Moses goes up. He receives the law. And he receives the law. He comes back the second time. They were so bad the first time. He broke the law. He had to get a second copy of it. Comes back. As he comes back, he reads the law to the people. And you can read this in Exodus 19. This is what the people do. They say, all that the Lord has said, we will do. They made their part of the promise of the covenant. And so Abraham killed an animal, and this is what it says. It says it in Exodus 19. It also says it in Hebrews chapter 8. It says that he dipped his fingers in the blood, and he sprinkled the people with the blood to seal the covenant. So again, you have a covenant that is sealed with blood. So you get to where we're at tonight. Luke chapter 22. The new covenant is about to be instituted. Now, if you were to look back at Jeremiah 31, God said, I will. This is something I will do in the future. It wasn't something that was actually in effect yet. So you get to the point to where Jesus is about to die, and he realizes his blood is going to be poured out the next day, or he knows his blood is going to be poured out the next day. And so he takes the cup, which represents his blood. He says, this is going to be poured out. This is the what? The blood of my new covenant. Or of my covenant. He was going to seal the covenant with his blood. Most of the Old Testament was focused on Israel's attempts and failures to keep the covenant. Think about it. The Old Covenant, the one that the Old Testament focuses on, was put in effect in Exodus, fairly early in Israel's history. And so from Exodus all the way through the end, they're under that covenant. And every single one of those books shows their inability to keep it, shows their failure to keep the law, shows their failure to measure up to the righteousness of God. And so by the time Jesus comes on the scene, you've got some Jews who are saying, there has to be a better way. There's got to be something other than this. And so the new way was coming. It was the new covenant that God promised in Jeremiah 31. It would replace the old covenant. But it was future. Think back to when we read the new covenant promise in Jeremiah 31. What were some of the things God promised? He says, I'll write their law on my heart. They'll know me. I will forgive their sin. I won't remember it anymore. You know, if you think about it, you read that, it sounds a lot like what happens to Christians, doesn't it? It sounds a lot like what happens to us. It sounds like what happens to us when we get saved. But I've got a question for you. Who was that promise made to? In Jeremiah 31, who was it made to? Look back at it. If you're still there, I've got to turn back. God said, I will make this covenant with, in verse 31, "Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, I will make a new covenant with" who? "The house of Israel. And with Judah." And then he reiterates it again in verse 33. "This shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel." Who was the promise made to? And when was the promise ratified? Well, that's why we are here tonight. We are about to celebrate the ratification of the new covenant. If you look in Luke 22, Jesus tells us that the cup there was a symbol of the blood that would be poured out the next day to make the new covenant that unconditional blood covenant. But there's something very important for us to remember as we come to this table. The covenant has been made. The foundation has been laid. The provision has been made with Jesus Christ in His death, burial, and resurrection. But this might shock some of you. Did you know that the new covenant has not been fulfilled yet? It is waiting to be fulfilled. The church does not fulfill the new covenant. Now, that shatters our mind, blows our mind in a lot of ways. The church doesn't fulfill the new covenant. Well, who was the covenant made with? Didn't we just see, "I will make the covenant with" who? "With the house of Israel and the house of Judah." So a day is coming when that covenant will be fulfilled. It will be during the forever reign or the millennial reign of Jesus Christ, Israel's forever king. Israel will be saved, and so all Israel shall be saved, we are told in Scripture. And all those promises there in Jeremiah 31 will be true of those Jews who come to Christ right at His second coming, right at the second return of Christ. It wasn't made with the church. It's not fulfilled yet. And that's why it's important to observe, when you're looking at a covenant, to observe the parties of the covenant. It was made with Israel. So that brings a question up. Where does this leave us? Why are we celebrating this here tonight if the new covenant was not made with the church? This is our relationship to it. As a church tonight, we are going to take these elements and we are going to rejoice in the blessing that we receive from the new covenant. It wasn't made with us, but glory to God, we get the blessing of it. As Gentiles, we weren't one of the parties. But by God's mercies, we get to partake of the blessings. Maybe this will help us understand it. Jeff and Vanetta have a house. They built the house, but let's say they bought their house. They buy their house. And when they buy it, they enter into a contract to buy it. And they are the two names that are on the contract with the person they buy the house from. So they buy the house, they go and they begin to live in it. Who are the parties to the covenant or to the contract? Jeff and Vanetta and the other person. But Cody lives there, doesn't he? Is he one of the parties? Kendra lives there. Tony lives there. Are they one of the parties? Are their names on the contract? No. But they sure enough get the blessings of that contract, don't they? If Jeff and Vanetta were to have a friend come live with them, the friend's name isn't on the contract, but they get the blessings for it. And Tony and Kendra and Cody should be very grateful that they get the blessings of the contract that their parents entered into to buy the house. And that's where we're at tonight. While the Jews will be the main recipients of the blessings of the covenant that Jesus ratified at the cross, we should be grateful. They should be grateful because the Jews should be grateful because they are going to receive the blessing of it. We should be even more grateful than them. Where would we be without the blessings of this covenant? Consider this fact. Without the blessings of the new covenant, you would sit here tonight not remembering the sacrifice of the Jewish Messiah for you. The blessing of the covenant means that you sit here and you are remembering the sacrifice of the Jewish Messiah. But in His love and mercy, the work that He did, He He has extended to you. He's poured His blessings out on you. Where would we be without that? You don't have to turn here if you don't want, but Ephesians chapter 2 tells us where we would be at without Jesus Christ extending the blessings of the covenant to us. This is what Paul said. That at that time ye were without Christ. You were aliens from the commonwealth of Israel. You were strangers from the covenants of promise. You had no hope, and you were without God in the world. And that is where we would still be today. No hope. Strangers to the promises of the covenants. Alienated from God. But Jesus, by His blood, brought us nigh to God. He drew us nigh so that we could partake of the blessings. One final thing to remember before we start here. We are the recipients of the blessing. It is made with Israel. Don't ever forget it's Israel's covenant. The church shouldn't get so high and mighty and proud that we remember that we're just getting the blessing of it. But don't become so focused on the blessing that you lose focus on the blessor. It is so easy for us to look at all the things that Christ gives us and to forget who it flows from, where we get it from. Turn over to the traditional passage that deals with the Lord's table in 1 Corinthians 11, if you will. And this is where we will begin to move in to this. The statement that we read in Luke was very similar to all the other Gospels. Jesus says, "This is the blood of my covenant." There really aren't any other details added there. Look, if you will, in verse 24 and 25 of 1 Corinthians 11. And I want you to, as I read this, see if there is a detail that you miss. Or see if there's something that's missing. Verse 24, "And when he had given thanks, he brake it and said, 'Take, eat. This is my body which is broken for you. This do in remembrance of me.' The same manner also he took the cup, and when he had supped, saying, 'This cup is the New Testament of my blood. This do ye, as oft as ye drink it, in remembrance of me.'" What is different there from what we read in the New Testament or in Luke? The difference is Paul, and this happened, he had witnesses there. Paul adds that Jesus said, "Do this in remembrance of me." That's why we're here. It is remembrance of Christ. Whenever you do this, do it in remembrance of Him. Focus on Him. Our primary purpose around this table tonight, don't miss this, our primary purpose around this table tonight is to turn our gaze upon Christ. To see the work that He did for us, the victory that He won for us, the victory that He won over Satan and death and sin, to see His everlasting love. And when we leave this table, our eyes should be fixed on Him. That's why it's good to have the Lord's table regularly. Because it gives us a chance, if we haven't done it, to turn our gaze back to Him and remember Him and what He's done. To fix our gaze back on the author and finisher of our faith. Are we rightly related to Him? Is He the preeminent one in our life? So as we come to the table, we will thank Him. We will glorify Him. We will remember Him. We will consider the sacrifice that He made for us.